What a weekend in the basketball world. March Madness opening weekend, NBA games, bunch of thrillers happening. Got into all of it with Danny Parkins from FS1. Now joining me to discuss the NBA March Madness, Danny Parkins. Danny, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. Thank you so much for having me back.
I'm looking forward to talking a lot about NBA today. March Madness later on. We're going to start out with some big.
I was going to say, is there anything going on in the world?
There's a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's so busy right now. Everything's happening. This is one of the best times of the year.
Yeah, and I don't make a ton of appearances on this show, but I'd like to lock up this Monday annually. You know, like that works. This is a pretty easy, this is a layup time as a guest with everything that's going on. My God,
I mean, it was such a fun weekend watching basketball. I felt like my TV or monitors had multiple screens on the entire time, watching NBA, watching end games, watching March Madness. It was a lot of fun. We'll start out with the NBA side. Lakers have won 9 games in a row. We did see a Madness thriller, Luke Kennard, hit a game-winning shot for the Lakers. So wide open, he had enough time to adjust the sleeve on his shooting arm before taking the jumper. And Lakers have won 9 in a row. They've beaten contenders. They've beaten playoff teams. They've won high-scoring games. They've won low-scoring games. Luka, over this stretch, is averaging 40 points per game, 8.4 boards, 7.4 assists. LeBron has taken on this supercharged Aaron Gordon style of play. And the Lakers look like contenders right now. But Danny, I know you have some skepticism about this team's ability to actually get through the gauntlet that is the Western Conference. Why is that?
Well, I mean, like, just, you know, if you say it out loud, they'd have to beat Jokic, Wemby, and Shea in consecutive rounds, 2 of the 3 without home court advantage, in order to make it to the NBA Finals. Like, Luka is an offensive supernova. He's playing the best ball he's played since he's been a Laker, no question about it. LeBron, I like how you described the Aaron Gordon thing. Like, you know, he's shooting more twos than he ever has as a Laker. You know, he's taking fewer overall shots. He's using more of his energy on the defensive end of the court, which obviously helps them. I do have some serious skeptic. Like, I know in a stretch of time, they're like the 6th rated defense in the NBA. I don't actually believe them to be the 6th best defense in the NBA. So like when you are playing, you know, the Nuggets, arguably the best offense in the league in a 7-game series, like I don't really think that they're going to be able to limit them when it's playoff intensity for all teams. So, you know, they're better than I thought they were going to be. They're playing out of their minds right now. And if nothing else, I can't say it with as much of my chest. Like, could they beat Minnesota or Denver or however it ends up falling in that 5-6 range? Like, sure, could they? I do not believe they can win 3 Western Conference playoff series. I do not believe that.
I mean, I think the argument is fair. Like, the West is tough for anybody. It's going to be tough for Oklahoma City. It's going to be tough for San Antonio. It's tough for literally any team considering the amount of great teams there are in the Western Conference. I do think with the Lakers, though, their offense could be just that special. It is possible. Like, Luka does look like he's played himself back into great shape. He's playing some of the best basketball we've ever seen him play on both ends of the floor. LeBron accepting this role. 1-2-3 with Austin Reeves being a guy who can have 25, 30-plus points any single night. Their offense could be the best offense in the Western Conference. But to your point, you just have the questions about can A, they sustain that, and B, is their defense anywhere as good as it has appeared to be over this 9-game winning streak? I think that's a fair concern when juxtaposed against Wemby as the anchor of the Spurs, and they're pretty good defensively even without Wemby on the floor. And then OKC being as special as they are defensively while also having some high-powered offense with both of those teams as well.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, we're parsing greatness here. The Lakers are not as deep as those teams. They are not as young as those teams. They are not as good defensively as those teams. And so it's hard for me to imagine it. Now, again, Luka is playing ridiculous. I don't even want to say out of his mind, because we have seen him reach basically these levels before. And so you can only put 5 on the court. And if you are putting Luka on the court with two other excellent offensive pieces, to your point, can you be the best offensive team in the sport? Yes. Is that generally speaking what I would want to say is like my formula to just like purely outscore you to make it through three rounds of a Western Conference playoff series? No. Like, I'd like you to be a little bit more balanced and show – I'd like to be able to believe in you a little bit more defensively come the playoffs. But J.J. Redick deserves a lot of credit, man. Like, they're confusing teams defensively. They're showing some zone principles defensively. You mentioned how open Kennard was on that inbounds play. LeBron was open on the play before it, like right at the rim, where he didn't go up for the dunk and he got knocked out of bounds. And there was like the whole thing. But like J.J. is clearly a good coach, even if he's a little annoying. You know, so he's a little prickly, to put it mildly. But like he's clearly a smart coach. So yeah, like they have a lot going for them. Like, I don't think me saying I don't think the Lakers are gonna win the title, I don't think Houston's gonna win the title, you know, and that's a much bigger failure than what this Lakers thing has been. So you know, they were a quasi all-in team for this year. So I don't think it's a huge knock. I just think it's more about reverence for what the Thunder and the Spurs have done. And I'll just ask you, like, let's say it was Nuggets Lakers. Would you pick the Lakers?
I'm picking the Lakers right now over the Nuggets. Wow. I think the Nuggets have just been a 500-ish team for a month and a half straight now. They've had their issues defensively as well. I do think the fact they're getting healthy right now, that answer to that question may change in 2.5 weeks. They just got Peyton Watson back this weekend. They got Aaron Gordon back. Hopefully he can stay healthy as well. And so I think by playoff time, maybe that answer changes. But at the same time, Danny, like, I think this Lakers team, defensively, those concerns are very real, as you're saying, on paper. But it's also possible that things have just clicked, because the one name we didn't mention here is DeAndre Ayton. Ayton, after, you know, complaining publicly for all the media to hear about a month back, saying they want to treat me like Clint Capella, he's playing more like Clint Capella. He's willingly screening and rolling. He's playing his ass off on defense. And that's what you need, is Ayton to be locked in. And will that sustain? Yes, that's a fair question to wonder if that's going to continue when he's always hot and cold. He's always been like that throughout his career. But what if this is like the year the Suns went to the finals and Ayton is all the way bought in and he is that versatile five for you, helping support these pretty good wings? Marcus Smart looks healthy defensively. They do have some bodies. Jake LaRavia is not a bad defender at all. They have some good players when LeBron is bought in, Luka's bought in. It seems like, to me, from the top of the roster with Luka and LeBron, there's buy-in, and then the role players are falling into place behind that. So in theory, the Lakers could have a highly versatile playoff defense. Am I picking them in a series over the Spurs? Probably not, but maybe. They're a young team. We'll see how the Spurs offense looks come playoff time. If that's a second round matchup between a 2 and a 3 seed, am I picking the Lakers over the Thunder? No, but the Lakers end game offense is definitely elite. And if there's any team that can beat OKC, like Denver almost did last year, like Indiana almost did last year, it's these elite end game offenses that can at least keep games close and then stomp you at the end. And so I think the Lakers get a chance. They've played themselves into that. And I don't think this streak is stopping anytime soon, Danny. They face the Pistons without Cade on Monday. Then they get the Pacers, the Nets, the Wizards, tanking teams, and then they face the Cavaliers. So the streak could reach 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 if they beat Cleveland before Tuesday, April 2nd, when they would face the Oklahoma City Thunder. So this streak could keep on rolling all the way through March Madness. We could get some Laker madness with this.
Yeah, there's nothing that could happen in the regular season the rest of the way that would make me to me, there's no difference between a 9-game winning streak and a 14-game winning streak. The Lakers are impressive. To your point, like, is there a way to thread this needle and see it through to the end? Yes. And I know you probably saw clips from First Things First, which is why you let it in with I know I don't believe in them. I also said in that totality of that segment, you could bet them at 45-1 to win the title and 22-1 to win the West, And I did both of those things. Like, there is a path to this that you have outlined well. I just do not think it is exceptionally likely. Are those odds interesting? Yes, they are. And on the buy-in piece from Ayton, this is something that I think LeBron deserves an immense amount of credit for. It's Luka's team. He has had no problem with that, like saying that publicly. Him diving for that loose ball and getting shouted out by JJ Redick, and him showing the picture of his scraped up knee, and JJ saying, I don't think I've ever seen him do that in his entire career. Like, that has to be noticed by a guy like DeAndre Ayton. And I know Ayton was playing hard before that, so I'm not going to say that it's like exactly causal. But then when they have the, what, 3 games in 4 nights, and it's in Miami, and they don't just say, schedule loss. We've got a little bit of a cushion here on the 3 seed. And LeBron plays, and then Luka plays, and then Reeves plays, and Luka has the 60. Like, that's a LeBron leadership thing. And so I do think the vibes are high. I do think LeBron is totally bought into his role. I do think that bodes well for guys like Smart and Ayton. Not that Smart has ever had an effort issue, but like in terms of like buy-in and accepting their roles, like I do think that, like, a lot of the soft factors right now are really positive for them. I just think that there are some like realities of the roster, and I think the West is so good that I can't pick them to do it. But again, their season has been a massive success from where they were 2 months ago.
I mean, it's amazing how just a month ago it was, well, where's LeBron going to go next year, to now, hey, LeBron is bought in and fits in that situation. But to your point, Danny, OKC's getting Jalen Williams back. He's coming back on Monday against the Sixers. He hasn't played for quite some time now this year, 26 games total. We have seen Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein, Lou Dort, J-Dub, and SGA in the lineup together for only 5 games this entire season. Thunder have missed the second most games due to injury, and yet they still have the best record in the entire NBA. What are your expectations here with J-Dub back now with a couple of weeks and change back before the NBA postseason? Does this make them the favorites for sure, clear-cut number one in the league, in the West at least, in your eyes?
Oh, in the league. Yeah. I think Thunder versus the field is an even money bet. I think they are much better than everybody. I think they are gonna, like, the Spurs and Wemby, and that him being 4-1 against them is like Wemby might be breaking all the rules, and we can talk Spurs if you want. I am surprised, and I don't know if you've encountered this or how you even feel about it. Maybe you're one of them. The number of people who think that it is more like their record without Jalen Williams is proof that the team is just so good and the system is so good that he doesn't really make much of a difference for them. I don't agree. I think he is clearly the type of player that you need to be a high-level two-way basketball team. Not that they are not a high-level two-way basketball team without him, but that speaks to Dagnall and Presti and how fundamental, like, they draft for a type. Like, they don't play a player that is a liability on the defensive end of the floor. Like, it's a remarkable thing. They don't sacrifice on that end for anybody who gets real minutes for them. And Jalen Williams was what, an all-star and second team all-NBA defense and third team mm-hmm. all-NBA last year?
Yep.
Yeah, he matters. yes, he will make, like, the guy had 3 straight NBA finals games where he scored over 25, one of which he scored 40. Like, yeah, he matters. Like, this idea that it's like, oh, well, you could just plug and play anyone in Oklahoma City and they're the exact same team. No. Like, he is, we'll see how he is on Monday, like, in terms of the first game back. We'll see how much ramp up he has. But he is the exact type of player that you want in the modern NBA. I think they were going to make a run at the wins record if they would have had a healthy season. Like, I think they are much better than everyone. I think we are at the beginning of a dynastic run. And I think that anyone picking against them is insane, personally.
I agree with you there. I mean, I think that's one of the debates Tom Haverstraw and I have had in recent weeks. He favors the Spurs over the Thunder. I'm like, there's no way. Like, I don't see it right now. I think with Victor Wembanyama, as you rightfully said, he breaks all the rules. but it's a young roster that still needs to prove it, that still has shooting questions, whereas the Thunder, they just now are also getting completely healthy. They're getting all of their guys back. They got A.J. Mitchell back. They got J-Dub back on Monday night. Isaiah Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren will hopefully stay healthy as well. The argument against OKC is it's really hard to go back-to-back. No team has done it in 7 years for a reason.
I hate that argument.
How come? Is that?
Well, like we've seen plenty of teams go back to back. It's hard to
go back further than 7 years. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, go back further than 7 years. We've seen teams do it. Like, I just think that is such an arbitrary endpoint.
That's where history begins, Danny. 7 years ago.
I just think that's so dumb. It's like people are like, oh, well, you thought that. Don't tell me what I thought. I picked the Thunder 2 years ago. I think this team is perfectly constructed. I think they are a perfect modern basketball team. And so, can Wemby beat them? I have to be open to that possibility. He signed his autograph for Jokic at the All-Star game by drawing a picture of an alien. He is literally built different. You know what I mean? So I have to be open to the possibility, but I can't think of a team that can play as deep as they play that doesn't have a defensive liability attached to them in the history of the sport. I can't think of one. And so it's just that ability. And listen, Denver took them closer than I thought they were going to last year. Indiana obviously took them closer, but Chet has gotten better. The McCain ad is important and matters. Last year's Thunder team should be the worst Thunder team for a 3 or 4 year stretch, just based on age and experience and guys coming into their prime. And if anything, the Jalen Williams injury makes them more dangerous, because now all of those guys who took up some of the scoring load and the minutes risk load can be even more efficient and play in shorter bursts. So Wemby will clearly have his day, and I want to see it this year in the Western Conference Finals, but I will not be picking against the Thunder. No chance.
I'm right there with you. I'm not. I think you perfectly described the team, a perfectly constructed modern NBA team. And you mentioned how some of these guys got better. Obviously, we didn't get to see Jalen Williams if he was going to take a leap this year, but the guys behind him did show improvement. AJ Mitchell, he gets an opportunity to play a little bit in the finals, sporadic minutes all year. He's had an awesome year off the bench, getting some starting opportunities with J-Dub out. SGA himself, he's better than he was last year. The way he's developed as a three-point shooter off the dribble, that was the one area of SGA on offense you could look at and say, well, he's elite in every single category, but three-point shooting off the dribble, he's merely solid. Well, this year he's been great shooting threes off the dribble. He added that layer to his game. We saw the game-winning jumpers he's had in recent weeks, the step back, the pull-up. The dude is filthy from literally every single spot on the floor, and so that adds a new dimension to this team. To your point, Danny, as young as they are, last year's team is probably going to be the worst they'll be over this 3-4 year stretch, assuming good health. And no, I'm not picking against OKC this year. I hope to God we do see San Antonio versus Oklahoma City in the Western Conference Finals. I think that would be a great first of hopefully many battles between those two teams. But I wouldn't pick San Antonio quite yet over this OKC team. No, I still have too many questions. I'm not even convinced the Spurs are going to make it that far. I'm not totally certain about that.
I'm not certain about it either because of their age. Listen, I think the best version of the Spurs team is when Dylan Harper is their second best player. And I think that is rapidly approaching. I think Dylan Harper is going to be special. But you said assuming health. I just think we should note that they didn't have health this year. They did not have health.
And yeah, look at the standings on screen, 56-15, still at the top.
they did not have good health luck this year. Part of the reason why it's hard to repeat is because you play longer into the season and you play so many games at such a high level, and then you have to make the turnaround and you are going to have tougher injury luck the next year. That happened to the Thunder. They literally lost their second best player for the vast majority of the season, and they're still the best team in the NBA in the tougher conference. That speaks to how much better they are and how much deeper they are. Like, take another team and have their second best player miss the amount of time that Jalen Williams has missed, and picture where you think they would, like, actually would, where they would be. Like, it's, you can't do it to any other. Now, Boston is the closest example, you know, because of what happened with Tatum, obviously, but, and he's their best player, depending on, Jaylen Brown's been amazing, depending on where you come out on that. But, like, they're in the East and they're not the one seed. So it's, you know, like, they're the number one overall seed out of the tougher conference, losing a guy who was a top 15 player in the NBA last year. I still think people underrate and underappreciate the Thunder.
And we'll be right back after this break. I want to go back to one thing you said about the Spurs. You think the Spurs are at their best when Dylan Harper is their second best player. And you said the time is rapidly approaching. He had one of his better games of the season over the weekend against the tanking Indiana Pacers, not even trying to win games at this point. They're just laying down dead. Dylan Harper started that game 24 points in 28 minutes. He's shot the ball really well from three-point range, over 40% since the All-Star break. He's basically, I mentioned a few weeks ago on the podcast how Stephon Castle has basically stopped taking three-pointers off the dribble. Dylan Harper, same thing. He's just pretty much sticking exclusively to shooting threes off the catch. So the Spurs clearly, I think, have identified that with Harper and Castle, their two young guards. People look at the Spurs, Danny, and they say, well, De'Aaron Fox needs to be their second best player. How do you envision that statement with what you said about Harper needs to be their second best player? Does that happen, need to happen this season, you think?
Or No. I don't. Future? No. Okay. I don't think it's possible that it happens this season. I'm saying, like, when the peak of their powers is when Dylan Harper is like 3 years into the NBA, his usage is higher. They've maybe figured out what they're going to, like, maybe De'Aaron Fox is no longer even there. And like, they are figuring out, like, to me, Fox is a great player, but I remember someone told me, you know, the first time you and I ever corresponded was around when my book came out, Pipeline to the Pros, and shameless plug. But like, I talked to a lot of everyone from like presidents of teams and coaches and executives and scouts and all levels of the NBA to research and report on that book about D3 guys. And like, I am not at all saying that I am an insider, this is anything like that. But like, I still keep in touch with some of those people. And I remember around the draft, I texted someone about, can you believe the Mavericks got so lucky and they like fell into the Cooper Flagg thing, right? Just like, it was what all the talking head shows that I'm on were talking about. And it was just like this, like, just like basically like venting about the lottery luck that the Mavs had. And the guy came back and said, everyone is going to miss how big of a deal it is that the Spurs get Dylan Harper. Like, if people were talking about trading out of that pick and like, would you move it? And, you know, obviously, listen,
that was me. Yeah. I was doing that.
A lot of people were doing it. And listen, if you could get Giannis, it's at least it, I can't say it's a dumb thought, right? Like, basically, anything short of that level of player, from what this one guy who's a very respected person told me, he's like, there was no way they were ever moving that pick. And I've watched him very closely ever since he said that. And I just think it's very clear that the guy can do basically whatever he wants on the basketball court in terms of like getting to his spots. He's very, very mature in that way. And so there's guys in front of him. But like, if you set the over under at all-star appearances for Dylan Harper at 4.5 for his career, I would take the over. If you did it at 6.5,
you'd take the over still.
I would consider it. Yeah. Wow. Like I think he's going to be a stud. And because it's also, I think it's a perfect pairing with him and Wemby. Like, I just think they're going to play together for 10 years.
So you think I'd be crazy to say, like I did last week in the podcast, that right now I'd take Con Knipl over Dylan Harper for the Spurs if I did a redraft?
Listen, I think that's crazy just because I think that there are listen, Colin Knipple is also amazing. And those shooting numbers are crazy. And you are going to want to surround Wemby with shooters for the entirety of his career. That is, there is no doubt about it. Like, let's put it this way. Any other team, I think Dylan Harper is the more valuable piece for the next 10 years. With Wemby, could you argue that he will elevate any point guard, ball dominant guard, and he just needs elite shooting? I guess you could make that argument, but I let's put it this way. I do not think the Spurs would agree with you. I do not think if the Spurs could redo the draft, they would take Colin Knipple. I think that they are fully invested in what Dylan Harper is going to become.
That's what Don Harris, Spurs reporter, said to me in response. He said, there's no chance that they would take Colin Knipple.
I think that they think that Dylan Harper is going to be a perennial all-star and will be Wemby's clear-cut Robin to the Batman, number two, Michael and Scotty, like, type of running mate, is what I think.
If that happens, which very well could, at some point we'll see what happens with Fox, where they flip him, if Harper ascends to that point, and we'll see what happens with this roster. But with Castle's special. I mean, I love that dude. I love Harper too. Like, anytime Spurs fans hate me because I say, oh, I'd take Khan over Harper right now for the Spurs. But I really like Dylan Harper too. Like, he's an awesome young player.
If you said I would take Khan right now over Harper, I think that's actually totally reasonable. And I maybe would even agree with you. Like, for this playoff run, would I take Khan over Harper? Yeah, maybe, because you have De'Aaron Fox. But for, like, Wemby's career, I would take Dylan Harper. And so, like, that, like, for this Spurs team, like, if you, it's like you get to add the best three-point shooter, yeah, maybe for this specific year, I would agree with you. But for the future, I would take Harper.
Stephen Curry is set to resume practice this week. The Warriors currently have the number 11 odds in the lottery if they miss the play-in. Steph's supposed to come back. Conceivably, they could try to win and try to get an 8 seed out of the play-in. Right now, they're the 10 spot. Is this the right choice to bring Stephen Curry back?
Listen, I mean, you do whatever Steph Curry wants to do, and they obviously are not going to fall out of the play-in because they're 8.5 up on New Orleans between 10 and the 11 seed. So, like, are you gonna deny Steph Curry the ability to try to play his way into the playoffs when he still is Steph Curry? For a what are the 11th odds in the lottery? I don't have it in front of me.
They are 9.4% to get a top four pick with the 11th best odds, 2% to get the number one pick. And that's the same spot the Mavericks were tied in to move up to number one last year.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, like, a top four pick in this draft, and I know we're going to talk about some of the guys in this draft, like, a top four pick in this draft is obviously incredibly valuable. That is obviously more valuable for the Warriors than being the 8 seed and losing to the Thunder in 5. Like, I think everybody would agree with that. But I don't think that you can shut down Steph Curry. Because, like, if you said you will get a top four pick, then you shut down Steph Curry. But for a 9.4% chance at it, I think you just say, good luck, Steph. Go see what you can do.
Yeah, let's see what can happen. I understand. I mean, we'll see. I mean, he's resuming
practice. It's just so easy for you and me to say. It's so easy for you and me to say.
Yes.
Like, you know, we want to make the play-in and lose so that we have a, you know, 9% chance of drafting, you know, Acuff or Boozer or whomever you think that would be there. Like, I get it. That would be better for the 2032 Warriors, but there's just no way.
One little fun nugget to chew on from this weekend. Del Curry got his jersey retired on Thursday night in Charlotte, number 30. Steph Curry was there. Seth Curry was there. A bunch of the Curry family was there. Yeah. Steph said in a TV local news interview with Charlotte, he was asked about Del saying, Steph asked, could I wear your number 30 in Charlotte? And Steph laughed and he says, oh, I'm just keeping my options open. So just Just saying, like if Steph in the back of his mind is wondering about playing in Charlotte, to your point, Danny, you can't do anything to infuriate Steph. If he wants to come back and play this year, you're not going to tell him, we're shutting you down. We're worried only about the future, because that's the stuff that could lead to him saying, hey, I want to play in Charlotte for the remainder of my career and help that team take a jump. So Golden State needs to be very careful there, when there definitely are other doors for Stephen Curry to go through if he wanted to, including wearing his dad's number 30 in Charlotte, like Seth did.
Yeah, which would be incredible. And you're going to lose. Like, if you know, like, yeah, well, can you have a better shot at winning out of the play-in and getting out of those odds? Sure. But like, you can lose with him too. Like, you gotta just do what Steph wants.
I agree with you there. You're 100% right about it. One last NBA thing. The Pacers and Wizards both have 16-game losing streaks right now happening at the same time. This is only the third time in NBA history that two teams have had 16-game losing streaks or longer in NBA history. Back in 2023-2024, the Pistons, while they were having a 28-game losing streak, the Spurs reached 18 games. And then all the way back in 1981-1982, both the Cavaliers and the San Diego Clippers had 19-game losing streaks at the same time. So we're seeing something historic right now, Danny, with all the losing happening around the NBA, with these teams trying to lock in a top five pick, because with the draft lottery odds today, you can only fall as far as five, like the Pacers could if at the number one slot, and the Wizards falling to number six with the number two slot right now with these long losing streaks. Do you think it's all worth it with what we've seen in March Madness, with Darren Peterson getting bounced, AJ DeBonta getting bounced, Cam Boozer, some Duke ups and downs? Are you looking at these March Madness games and saying, hey, maybe this losing isn't all worth it? Or do you still believe this draft class is absolutely historic?
I think the draft class is special. We've seen plenty of great players in college basketball not take their teams far. You know, like it's hard, man. You're 19 years old and you're playing against 22-year-olds and who are awesome also, you know.
Sometime like, 24, 25.
I certainly would not downgrade, you know, AJ or Peterson because of their team had early round exits. Like I wouldn't do that. Like if you want to say that you think Peterson is a little bit overrated as a prospect, I'm willing to listen to that argument. I disagree with you, but I'm willing to listen to it. But I think it is like, is it worth it? Is actually like, it's an interesting way to frame it, because I think getting the player is worth it, but I do think like the cost of the league reputation is not a good look. Like Indiana is an outlier. Indiana is bad because of the Halliburton injury, and they were just in the finals, and that was terrible luck. And like they're taking their medicine for a year. But you know, teams that like acquire Trae Young and Anthony Davis and then basically shut him down, or like what Utah did, like it's just, that's not a good look for the league. That is something that Adam Silver is going to address and clearly needs to address. And I'm glad. And of course, my Chicago Bulls are late to the party. And in a historic draft, they started tanking too late just because they're just
typical Bulls.
Unbelievable. Hey, it's the best draft we've seen in a while. Hey, there's no real punishment for tanking. No, we'll get around to it. Sweet. So like, you know, it like in a vacuum, it is worth it and it is smart for the team to do, but that doesn't mean it's not a huge problem for the league, because it's a bad look for a couple hundred bucks for a ticket getting an equal portion of the national TV revenue and you're just like losing by design. So I do think this draft class is special. I do think it's the smartest way to do it in terms of getting a star player, but that's Adam Silver's job to fix. Like they should not be incentivized in this way.
We'll be right back. You mentioned Darren Peterson. You wouldn't say he's overrated as a prospect like some are arguing. Kansas got bounced in the second round by St. John's, a Dylan Darling game winner after a series of fouls to drain the clock by Kansas.
Yeah.
When it was tied 65-65, Dylan Darling drives to the rim, right hand layup, epic finish. Darren Peterson eliminated. Not the best tournament for Peterson. He was 11 for 24 in their first round victory over California Baptist. He had 28 points in that game. And then in the second game, he started out really hot, 2 3-pointers early in the game. He looked like Ray Allen on a dribble handoff that he took, fully contested. Didn't do a lot in the game for the most part, 21 points on 15 shots. I think with Peterson, there's two sides arguing with him right now. There's the people who say, well, clearly he wasn't fully healthy this season, dealing with the cramps and whatever other injuries, the hamstring injury, the quad injury, whatever else he was actually dealing with. We didn't see the full Darren Peterson. And then you have the side that say, well, maybe it's just the level of competition. He performs significantly better against quad 3 and 4 teams than he did against quad 1 and 2 teams. It was like a 12 or 13% differential in effective field goal percentage with quad 1 and 2 teams versus quad 3 and 4 teams. That's the biggest difference of any lottery prospect this year, a higher than AJ DeBounce, a higher than Kingston Fleming's, among others, according to CBB analytics. So there's two different camps with Peterson right now. Do you still have him as the number one prospect in the draft, Danny? And what's the argument for what you said earlier? You wouldn't say he's being overrated at all.
The goal is to get superstars. That's the goal. That's how you win championships. That's how you fill arenas and grow your team and get sneaker deals, and like the goal is superstars, and he clearly can be a superstar. Like I think he very clearly can be an elite scoring guard in the NBA, and that is something that the NBA really likes, and it sells tickets. Now he is not a superstar high flying athlete. Like there are, like, I don't think the Ant Edwards comp is correct. But he's a good athlete and he can get to the rim and he is a 3-level scorer, and he does have, you know, you said Ray Allen. I see some Donovan Mitchell. I know some people like the Devin Booker comp. Like I think he is. You need to get an honest answer about the medical stuff, and I don't have that. But if you get medical clearance on this kid, I think I will be absolutely floored if he goes any lower than 2. But, you know, like I think that the ceiling, you are drafting for ceiling. And is there a safer pick in the draft? Yeah, there is. But if the goal, if you're tanking, if you're losing 16 games in a row and putting your fans through that, the goal on the other end is to get a superstar. And I think that Darren Peterson can be a superstar.
I think it's a fair argument. He shows superstar qualities. I mean, it really sometimes is that simple. Does the guy make you go, wow? Yes, he has made you go, wow, both at prolific prep in high school and at Kansas this year. But he's also made you go, oh, a bunch of times too. I mean, even in the tournament, a lot of tough shot attempts, not getting to the basket in the waist.
At least he was shooting.
Well, like Kansas didn't have a lot of other options. They were 1 for 13 or 2 for 14, I think, combined from 3-point range. Non-Peterson players, nobody else could buy a bucket. He was their only source. I mean, there were times, I posted that on screen that you're seeing right now if you're watching on YouTube. Kansas needs to feed Darren Peterson the ball every single time. I posted that after he just called for an isolation against Ejiofor, drove to the paint. It was a moment where it was like, okay, here we go. Clear out for Peterson. Let him go to work. Give him space. This is what it's going to look like more like in the NBA. And then the next time up the floor, he got matched up with Ejiofor again, and he got stripped.
Yeah.
I was like,
the drive there was telling, and
it was.
You know, I would have been much more concerned if that stat line would have been like 2 for 9, and he would have like disappeared and not shot the ball. Like he was clearly hurt. He was clearly hurt. He played. I don't know what it finished. I think he played 30 or more minutes in like 7 of his last 9 games. something like that.
He did. It was his longest stretch of the year with heavy minutes, but also his most inefficient scoring stretch of his entire season too. Both
that
from
team's
three
not good.
And from at the rim.
Yeah, that team's not good, and so I think he is. I'm pretty convinced he's going to be a very, very, very good pro. Again, I would need to interview him like anybody. You know, DeBanza is that guy's got a very high floor. Right. And probably a very high ceiling attached to it. And Acuff looks like an absolute stud. It's a loaded draft. But if your intel tells you that guy was just hurt and cares, and it's not like a chronic thing or a between the ears thing, and we're drafting for who has the highest ceiling, I think Darren Peterson has the highest ceiling.
So you'd have him number one right now over DeBanza, over Boozer.
Yeah, based on ceiling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's fair. I do think it's fair. I'm not going to argue that. I think it's going to depend
DeBanza,
on.
DeBanza is, again, like DeBanza might be Paul George, dude. Like,
yeah.
If DeBanza's Paul George, you have to have a very high ceiling to be better than that, because you'd be thrilled if you drafted Paul George with the number one overall pick. But
absolutely. For sure. 6'9", and he can play make a bit too. I think that's where I look at Peterson. I know in high school he showed a bit more burst, a bit more playmaking. He wasn't like necessarily like he's not a savant. He's not like a great high assist to turnover ratio guy like Darius Acuff is, where he can sling the ball around the floor everywhere. But he playmaked more in high school than he did at Kansas. I think that's in part because of his teammates. He did make some nice passes. Even in both opening weekend, he had like a spin, like a Rondo-style kick out. And then in the second round game, he had a nice kick out to White for a corner three that was bricked like everything else. I think there's more playmaking there. However, I think Peterson at 6'9", with some of the stuff he can do off the dribble, the areas of the floor he can operate, whether it's back to the basket, face up, pick and roll, ISOs, and then Boozer. People talk about Boozer like he's just going to be pick and pop Al Horford and back to the basket Kevin Love. They have Cameron Boozer running high pick and roll. The guy can operate in different spaces on the floor. And so whether it's Acuff, the extreme of him as a pure point, or whether it's Boozer and DeBanza and these guys, I do think at the college level, some of them at least showed more of a playmaking creation knack to make their teammates better. Whereas Peterson, the fact is the team was better offensively. They were 3.2 points per 100 possessions better offensively with Peterson off the floor than they were with him on the floor, according to CBB Analytics with their data there. So I think with Peterson, I wish I saw him elevate that offense more than the other players did. But ultimately, the guy's got more than he was able to show at Kansas, whether that's due to something chronic or something that was just affecting him this year. That remains to be seen. But Kansas is out. They're done. BYU is out. He had the most tournament debut points since Stephen Curry. Impressive debut for him. Another guy that didn't get a lot of help. DeBanza, do you have him second ahead of Boozer on your board?
Yeah. And listen, man, Acuff is awesome. Acuff is a problem. So I think that he has an argument between him and Boozer for 3 and 4, honestly, again. Mm-hmm. But I do tend to draft ceiling. Like, you know, if what did Simmons said Acuff is Kyrie? Like if Kyrie, Donovan Mitchell, and Paul George are all in this draft, it's a pretty good draft.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good draft. And then you might be talking about like fit, safety, like high floor. You know, you'd be kind of parsing greatness there. But DeBanza is, there's no way he's not a good pro. Guy has games where he plays 40 minutes. Guy had no help. Fleming's got hurt, obviously. Saunders, his second best player.
Saunders, Richie
Saunders. Saunders. I was thinking of Kingston Fleming from Houston. He got hurt, so he was carrying even more of the load. Like, the efficiency stuff in college is tough, man, when you have a superstar and then everybody else is not. Like, it's a tougher thing for me to totally buy into. So, like, I do try to go more based on, like, the eye test of it. And it's like, oh, yeah, that guy is a high-level professional basketball player. And, like, if people are listening the whole time, like, the Jalen Williams comp, what I was talking about earlier with Jalen Williams of like kind of perfect modern basketball player. Dubantsev like fits that. Like it's like, oh, he obviously can play D. He obviously can rebound. He obviously plays with high effort. He obviously can score. Like, you know, like there's no way he's not good. And shooting form looks good. Like, you know, well, it'll get refined. They'll work on him with shooting coaches and all of that. But like, it's not broken by any means. And so, yeah, I think that he's awesome. And if he goes number one because of questions around Peterson, I think that's like a totally legitimate thing. I just think the fully realized version of Peterson still shows to me the highest ceiling of anybody.
I mean, of those top guys, we'll see Cameron Boozer against St. John's on Friday. I'm excited for that one.
That'll be fun.
A very fun game. I mean, both those games in the East bracket are going to be very good in Washington, D.C. this weekend. The best game of the weekend, I thought, was Iowa beating Florida, at least most exciting one that I watched live, 73-72. Amazing game with game-winning three-pointer. Florida kind of botching that end game. I want to get to something you talked about on your show last week with kind of the death of the NCAA Cinderella, and you mentioned with the NIL and the transfer portal from 2000 to 2021, you said there were 23 double-digit seeds from non-power conference seeds. And then from 2022, they made it to the Sweet 16, yes. And then from 2022 to now, there have been two. And now there have been none for three straight years. No big upsets. And the Cinderella does seem to have died in some ways, but I wonder, has the definition of Cinderella more changed? Like, do we need to look at Iowa as a 9 seed as a Cinderella, Texas as an 11 seed as a modern Cinderella, where it's like they're these transfer heavy teams? Like Iowa, they get Ben McCollum as their head coach, hiring from Drake. He brings four starters from Drake to Iowa. Texas, their entire starting five is full of transfers. Hyde from Purdue, Pope from Oregon State, Swain from Xavier, the full starting five. It's all transfers within the last 2 years to Texas. Has the definition of Cinderella just changed, Danny, with what we're looking at now in March Madness?
I refuse to call Texas a Cinderella. We have to change the name. Like, they're the richest athletic department in the country. You can't be Cinderella. Cinderella is Loyola and Sister Jean. Like, Cinderella could have been High Point. Like, part of the pageantry of the tournament is David v. Goliath. You cannot tell me that, like, plucky Big Ten resources school, plucky richest conference in the country school is Cinderella. Like, is it a double-digit seed? Yes. Is it an upset? Yes. And I'm even willing to listen to an argument to say this is better because we're going to see Titans playing each other. And the tournament used to get worse as it went along because you'd get fewer games and then you would see a huge team play a little team who would happen to squeak through. And then the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight games were blowouts. Like, I'm even willing to listen to an argument that this tournament will get better as it goes going forward as opposed to getting worse as it goes. Like, I'm not saying it's all bad, but the pageantry of one shining moment was buzzer beaters and Cinderella, David Goliath. And I do think, just like the wealth inequality gap in America is growing, I think the wealth inequality gap in college sports is growing between haves and have-nots. And this is an unintended consequence of it, that it is just not possible for a plucky little school to compete with teams that have guys making six figures on their bench. I don't think it's possible. This is professional basketball at this point. They're just wearing college uniforms, and some teams have way more resources than others. And if you play well for one of those teams early, these teams have NIL budgets and scouting directors and general managers, and they recruit them away from the mid-major school to the power. And who would blame them? Like, I could stay at fill-in-the-blank low school and make $75,000, or I could go to different school and make $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, whatever it is. Like, so I think we can't call Texas Cinderella. I think upsets are going to be even rarer. And I do think, like, an interesting conversation about the opening weekend of this tournament, because I used to be someone and have been someone and still do think, like, I'm like, this is arguably the best event in sports. Like, the opening weekend of the tournament, Thursday to Sunday, when it goes from 64 down to 16, four games on at a time. Like, to me, that Thursday and Friday is, like, really, really special. I love it. Am I a bigger NFL fan? Yes. Am I a bigger NBA playoff fan? Yes. Am I a bigger Masters fan? Sure. But, like, there's at least an argument for that 4 days, 64 down to 16, is the best that we have in sports. These games were not close. Like, by and large, and I haven't had my researcher run the data on it yet, like, we're recording this Monday morning, but, like, the margin of victory of those games was not, so it wasn't just that the favorites were winning, it was that they were bludgeoning people. And so I do think the tournament is fundamentally changing before our eyes, and what is going to need to happen for the event to still feel like it is like a tier one event in our sports landscape, where we don't like kind of nitpick at it and critique it the whole time, is we're going to need to get epic Final Fours. Like, we're going to need an epic title games. Like, it's got to get better as it goes with, you know, Goliath v. Goliath type of matchups. And I hope that we do, because I love it. I love college basketball and I love March Madness. But I think that an unintended consequence of I'm all for players getting paid. So this isn't an argument against it. I just think it's made it virtually impossible for the little guy to compete.
There is no chance. I mean, like, you called an unintended consequence earlier. I'm not totally certain it was unintended. I mean, this was kind of one of the arguments against NIL at the time. It was like, well, what happens to these small schools with no money? We're seeing what happens. They have no shot. They can't keep guys. There's no continuity. There's no chemistry with these young teams to be able to develop that over 3 or 4 years and be able to take on a Titan and take him down. It's just, it's basically impossible. And so that did feel this year more than any of the years since NIL started. This, it just felt most apparent this year. I don't know if it's because we have years of it kind of happening, but I thought this opening weekend was less thrilling than many others in the past. But at the same time, I am hopeful that the Sweet 16 and beyond does end up being more epic with some of the great teams that are out there, some of the great players that are out there. I'm hopeful, but there's no guarantee of that. There's just no guarantee.
Yeah, right. Because it's single elimination basketball. Yes. Like, you get blowouts in NBA playoff. Yeah, yep. You get blowouts in NBA playoff games too. But over the course of a series, if the teams are close, you hope that you're going to, you know, ultimately get epic series. But that's not the case here. And listen, good for Iowa. But I can't, that Iowa winning over Florida is not going to like captivate the country in the way that like Florida Atlantic or Loyola or George Mason, you know what I mean? It's just different. Like it's not, I can't imagine Iowa basketball is about to be profiled on Good Morning America, like the way that Loyola was with Sister D. You know, like it's just yeah. Like, it's like, oh, okay. A Big Ten school beat a SEC school. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just, those are the types of stories that captures the casual fan and makes the event feel bigger. It does make it bigger. It doesn't make it just feel bigger. It is bigger.
It is bigger. It is a fairy tale trope. Like we call it Cinderella and then call it David v. Goliath. Like it's like Greek mythology. You know what I mean? Like that's what the term. So if the term is just different. And I do think the blowouts make it less enjoyable. But I was at a sports book all day Saturday. You know what I mean? Like I love the event. They've got me. But and the only reason I said unintended consequences, like, I don't think it was like top of the agenda like, you know, like it was like, we have all this money. These players need to get some of it. What are we going to do about it? And then one of the things that have come out of it is, oh, yeah, we liked underdogs and upsets. Well, OK, that we can't have that anymore with all the money going to these top teams.
I know. We'll see how the tournament develops. It resumes on Thursday with the Sweet 16. I think first game is Texas-Purdue, if I remember correctly. So looking forward to this weekend again. Just nonstop basketball for 4 days straight. It's still a good time. It's still a good time. Oh, I had fun this weekend. It's still awesome. It's just you. I did miss those Cinderellas. That's why I'm kind of like reaching for somebody else to. But no, it's just not the same with an Iowa or a Texas, as you said, Danny. Danny, thank you so much. People can check you out on First Things First, on FS1. You're everywhere, man. People also go check out Pipeline to the Pros as well. We'll plug your book once again.
Why not, man? Why not? We're still selling tens of copies. Forward by Jeff Van Gundy, endorsed by Woj and others. People should check it out. We worked hard on it. But no, man, listen, thank you for having me back on the show, and enjoy. Now it gets real, man. Playoffs right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
No sleep.
Right around the corner.
No sleep for us, Danny. The next like 3 months.
And looking forward to it. Have a good day, Danny. Thank you to Danny Parkins for joining me on today's show. Thank you to Father John Misty for the music. Thanks to Emmy and the team for producing us. We will be back again on Thursday. Me and Tom Haverstraw live on YouTube, as always, at 11:30 on Thursday, talking about March Madness, talking about NBA, and a bunch else. So be sure to tune in for that. Have a good week, everybody.